This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. Your source for Pan-African news and world developments, I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and coming up on Africa News Tonight.
One of the biggest findings that we wanted to highlight that I think we felt many people didn't know was how young the population is in Africa.
That's Melinda Gates of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation on their newly released 2018 Goalkeepers Report. We'll have all the details coming up. Also, deep divisions between member states threaten to derail an EU summit on migration scheduled tomorrow. UN investigators have accused South Sudan's government of failing to address an epidemic of sexual violence and rape, and thousands of parents are withdrawing their children from schools in the English-speaking regions of Cameroon. We'll have these stories and more all ahead on Africa News Tonight. The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation says investing in Africa's youth will be key to cutting global poverty in the coming decades. The foundation today released its annual Goalkeepers Report on achieving the UN poverty-reducing targets for 2030. Melinda Gates recently spoke with our colleague Lenore Madu about the report's findings and some of the key areas that need to be addressed.
One of the biggest findings that we wanted to highlight that I think we felt many people didn't know was how young the population is in Africa. 60% of the population is under the age of 25. And so if the world makes the right investments in health and nutrition and education, this is an amazing generation that has unbelievable ingenuity. And if we make those investments, we give them leadership opportunities to lift their societies and their countries up. And we want to make sure that message gets out to the world. Let's make these investments so that they can change their whole country.
So then clearly investment is very critical in terms of carrying this young population in the future for economic growth. What are your thoughts on the importance of young people in Africa's development as we look to achieving the sustainable development goals?
Well, the young people often have the new ideas, they have vibrancy, they're energetic, they see things in a different way. And if we make sure that we give those leaders opportunities, they will seize them and they will make sure that things change in their countries. Some perfect examples are some of the young women I'm meeting in the health sector. They're saying, we're realizing that if we give access to contraceptives to young women, that is women who come in who are 16, 17, 18 years old, and we're not biased about how we treat them, oh my gosh, they can space the births of their children and attend school and stay in university. We know that those investments in contraceptives, that when women have access around the world, it lifts up their whole family and it lifts up whole economies. And so I'm inspired by these young leaders who say, I'm going to work on taking bias out of the healthcare system. That's just one example of many.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned contraceptive. It's definitely part of the big picture as we look at family planning. Why is family planning such an important component when we talk about development? For your work, why is it a key aspect of development?
Because if you look at all the economies who've made the transition from low to middle to high income countries, every one of them allowed voluntary access to contraceptives to women. Because we know if men and women can space the births of their children and have them if and when they want to have them, there are more opportunities then for those children and for their families. Girls can stay in school, they can get their daughters educated, they can feed their children. Once they're fed, well-fed, nourished, educated, those people create amazing opportunities and new jobs in the economy. But you can't make that economic transition without, that is one of the pillars that you have to put in place, is voluntary access to contraceptives. It's not the only, but it's one of the key levers.
When you look at where we are, I know we just talked about access to contraceptive and family planning. What do you see as some of other priority areas in developing countries, especially African countries, as the world looks to achieving the SDGs in 2030?
Sure. In countries, the investments that need to be made are in health and in education and in the agricultural sector. If you make investments in all three of those areas, so in health, making sure that the number of childhood deaths go down by vaccinating children, making sure people have access to malaria bed net, making sure they have access to contraceptives, good nutrition and counseling around nutrition. In education, we've made as a world a commitment in the previous set of goals to make sure kids had access to school, which they now do. So enrollment's there, but we need to get the quality of education to come up, much like Vietnam has done, as we highlight in the report. And then in the agriculture sector, we need to make sure that we help countries move from subsistence farming to making real investments so that you can do larger scale farming so they can feed themselves. And again, we give a great example of that from Ghana in the report.
That was Melinda Gates of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation speaking with VOA's Lenore Madu about the foundation's latest report on efforts to reduce global poverty. Well, deep divisions between member states threaten to derail a European Union summit on migration scheduled tomorrow in the Austrian city of Salzburg. Brussels wants to deploy EU border guards across the external borders, but frontline countries like Hungary want the police to have their own borders, Henry Ridgewell reports.
Sixty African migrants were plucked from the Mediterranean moments before their inflatable boat sank beneath the waves in a perilous rescue Saturday by Spanish authorities. It is the latest of dozens of such operations this year on the so-called Western Mediterranean route, which now accounts for more than half of all illegal crossings into the European Union. Most of the migrants are from Guinea, Mali and Morocco. Overall, migrant numbers into Europe are down 40% year on year, but migration continues to dominate EU policy debate. Visiting Paris before Wednesday's Salzburg summit, host Austrian Chancellor Sebastian Kurz Monday called for an enhanced role for the EU border agency Frontex across the bloc's external frontiers.
To secure our external borders, the frontline countries of the European Union need our support, they need our solidarity, but on the other hand, they also have to accept the support and the help of the European Union.
That was a thinly veiled message for frontline states, including Italy and Hungary, whose governments have repeatedly blamed the European Union for the migrant crisis. Speaking to lawmakers Monday, Hungary's Prime Minister Viktor Orbán offered a blunt response.
Határvédelemhez jobban értünk, mint bárki Brüsszelben.
He says Hungary is better at border protection than anyone else in Brussels or some international organization. Therefore, Hungary will not give up the right to protect its borders. Even within Europe's political alliances on the right and left, there are growing divisions over migration, says analyst Leopold Traugott of policy analyst group Open Europe.
The summit will most likely again be portrayed as the battle between, on the one hand, the progressives who want to keep Europe open, who want to continue to help asylum seekers, and on the other hand, the hardliners, the populists who want to close Europe down and create a fortress Europe. But in the end, the division isn't that clear-cut.
At London's insistence, Britain's exit from the European Union, just 6 months away, will also be discussed. The International Monetary Fund warned Monday that failure to strike an exit deal would entail, in its words, substantial costs for Britain's economy. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
UN investigators have accused South Sudan's government of failing to address an epidemic of sexual violence and rape. The Commission on Human Rights in South Sudan reports few cases are ever investigated or prosecuted. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva, where the commission has submitted its findings to the UN Human Rights Council.
The three-member commission recently returned from a mission to South Sudan, where it heard testimonies of wanton killings and numerous accounts of brutal sexual violence. Commission Chair Yasmin Suka says in Ye County, the commission was told women had been abducted by government soldiers and raped, and that many women who gave birth after being raped abandoned their babies because of the stigma attached.
Women in South Sudan have been treated by government soldiers and armed actors to the conflict, including local militias, as spoils of the conflict. They also experience sexual violence during intercommunal violence between rival ethnic groups clashing over land and cattle, and live with the threat of sexual violence on a daily basis, which is fueled by the lack of accountability and justice for these crimes.
A study last year by the Global Women's Institute and the International Rescue Committee found two-thirds of women and girls in South Sudan have reportedly experienced violence at least once in their lives. Suka says the plight and suffering of South Sudanese women and girls can no longer be ignored. She says they deserve justice and compensation, as well as medical treatment and counseling for the trauma they have endured. She says the failure to punish the perpetrators of serious crimes leads them to believe they can continue to commit horrific acts with total impunity. She warns sustainable peace in the country will not be possible without justice and accountability for serious crimes. South Sudan's Minister of Justice and Social Affairs, Paulino Wanawila Onango, says his government does not condone violations of human rights, and improvements have been made in this regard. He says special protection police units have been set up, and 30 police officers, mainly women, are being trained to investigate cases of sexual violence and to counsel the victims. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Seventeen minutes past the hour, this is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. Zimbabwe President Emmerson Mnangagwa officially opened the ninth parliament in what is being called Zimbabwe's Second Republic. It is the first State of the Nation speech given since the fall of Robert Mugabe, who led the nation for 37 years. Reporter Kutsaye Zvinavashi has more from Harare.
The speech comes while the country is in a state of emergency because of a cholera outbreak that has claimed 30 lives and left thousands bedridden. President Emmerson Mnangagwa said the government should act.
Let us, as a nation, commit to permanently eradicate these medieval diseases, mainly through addressing the challenges related to clean water and sanitation provision, as well as sustainable waste management practices. Going forward, government and local authorities will be seized with this issue.
As many in the ruling ZANU-PF expected, the opposition MDC Alliance lawmakers booed Mnangagwa and boycotted parliament while he was speaking. The opposition says Mnangagwa stole the election from their presidential candidate, Nelson Chamisa, in the July 30th polls. Mnangagwa did not respond to the slights and went on to share his vision for fulfilling his election promises of reviving Zimbabwe's battered economy.
My government will accelerate ongoing efforts towards stabilizing the macroeconomic environment, creation of fiscal space, currency reforms, and enhancing foreign currency availability, improving liquidity, increasing the country's investment attractiveness, reducing the budget deficit, and ensuring gradual growth of all sectors of our economy.
In the past, the government of Zimbabwe has crafted impressive-looking turnaround strategies, but corruption and lack of transparency usually stalled progress. To avoid those failures, Mnangagwa says government should be open.
As government, we will continue to entrench transparency, accountability, and good governance in all public entities and institutions of our country. As I stated in my inauguration speech, no person or entity will be allowed to steal, loot that which belongs to the people of Zimbabwe. No one No one is above the law.
Supporters say Mnangagwa has a good vision for the economy, but skeptics say implementation over the next few months will be telling. Mnangagwa says a series of bills will come before Parliament on reducing bureaucracy and improving business efficiency. Pro-democracy activists worry Mnangagwa's focus on the economy while ignoring the need to strengthen democratic institutions will turn Zimbabwe into a version of China, where the economy is booming but democracy is non-existent. The military put Mnangagwa into the presidency 10 months ago after it ousted President Robert Mugabe, who had led the nation since through its liberation struggle. Mnangagwa, also a Liberation War veteran, had served as Mugabe's vice president until he was expelled in what was viewed as a move to pave way for Mugabe's wife. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zunawashe from Harare.
Recently, the new United States ambassador to Zimbabwe, Brian Nickel, sat down to talk with Marvelous Malanga Nyahuye of VOA's Zimbabwe service. Today, we bring you a portion of that discussion in which Ambassador Nickel shares his hopes for Zimbabwe's future economic development.
So many areas, but education and exchanges are very important. Yes. So hopefully people will be joining us with the Mandela Washington mm-hmm. Fellowship. That's a great exchange program. We have other cultural and educational exchanges, bringing artists and athletes mm-hmm. to Zimbabwe and sending Zimbabweans to the United States to learn more about our country. Cultural preservation is an area that I'm very passionate about, and we have some exciting things that we're going to be doing and some of the most important cultural sites in Zimbabwe mm-hmm. going forward.
You also spoke about some areas that Zimbabwe can actually, you know, promote more, areas mm-hmm. like tourism. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, Zimbabwe has so much economic potential, and when you look at the area of tourism, Zimbabwe is one of the most beautiful countries in the world. It has amazing wildlife and amazing natural vistas. Victoria Falls is world-renowned, and Zimbabwe should be capturing more tourists and providing them with a world-class mm-hmm. experience. So hopefully we'll get to see more investment in that area. In addition, Zimbabwe agriculturally has been a powerhouse over time, and hopefully the reforms that both candidates talked about during the presidential campaign will be implemented to help build a more resilient and successful agricultural sector. And then obviously the extractive industry sector, mining, is one where Zimbabwe has tremendous potential. Mm-hmm. 40 different valuable minerals in Zimbabwe that I think, if properly managed, could provide tremendous, tremendous opportunities for both employment mm-hmm. and foreign exchange earnings.
Going back to the elections, you said you met both President Emmerson Mnangagwa and opposition leader Nelson Chamisa. What's your take?
Well, I think they're both people who love their country and are committed to improving Zimbabwe and changing many of the problems of the past. I look forward to working with both of them. Both of them were very gracious in receiving me on multiple occasions. I look forward to getting back to Harare next week to talk to both of them shortly after my arrival. And helping to find a way forward of cooperation and engagement between Zimbabwe and the United States.
That was U.S. Ambassador to Zimbabwe, Brian Nickel, speaking with VOA Zimbabwe Service's Marvelous Malanga Nyahuye here in Washington. Well, thousands of parents are withdrawing their children from schools in the English-speaking regions of Cameroon after armed men attacked and wounded dozens of people in their institutions. Separatists fighting for the independence of the English-speaking regions of Cameroon had warned parents not to send their kids to school, stating that they could not assure safety. Mogi Edwin Kenzika reports from Bouye, southwestern Cameroon.
Dozens of villagers and parents searched the forested areas around Sase, a neighborhood in the southwestern town of Bouya, early Tuesday looking for students who fled after armed men attacked the St. Joseph's College late Sunday. Several dozen people were wounded in the attack. Senator Charles Mbelamoki, a lawmaker from the English-speaking southwest region of Cameroon, who is leading the villagers, say they are happy they found the three students who were still missing.
With the assistance of some good Samaritans, we picked up some of the students who had escaped. Some of them had wounds. Some of them were so traumatized. Some did not know where they were. Some were in their night dresses, pajamas, and so on. In fact, it was quite pathetic, emotional. But all of the student body of SASE that were in school have been appropriately, adequately accounted for.
Bernard Okalia Bilai, governor of the southwest region of Cameroon, said an unknown number of armed men attacked the school, its students and staff. He said some of the children, with ages ranging from 9 to 17 years, received machete wounds and others were shot with locally made guns, but fortunately, none were killed. After the incident, parents withdrew their children from the school, which has more than 500 students. Half a dozen other schools in the English-speaking Southwest urged parents to take their children home. Other parents were already withdrawing their kids. Teacher John Lum, who left with his three kids from St. Joseph's College, SASE, says he does not trust the governor's assurance that they will be safe.
The governor himself, who is saying that people should stay back, that they are protected, he is moving around with soldiers protecting him. Will the soldiers protect all the people? That's the reason why I cannot stay. I have to leave.
Cameroon's Minister of Secondary Education, Professor Nalova Lyonga, is pleading with school administrators in safer locations to accept the displaced children, even if their classrooms are congested.
Please accept all students who are transferring from the Northwest or Southwest as a result of the crisis. Accept every child who comes in and who wants to move. Address the problem further up to the ministry, to the governors, the local administration, and then send it to us. Where there is an overflow, we are definitely going to move the rest of the students to some other place.
Last month, armed separatists on social media warned parents against sending their children to school. They said they could not guarantee the safety of children at school since their fighters will be in running battles with the military to stop the organization of the October 7 presidential election. At least 70 schools have been torched since crisis began in Cameroon English-speaking regions in 2016. When teachers and lawyers protested the overbearing use of the French language in the bilingual country, separatists took over and requested the creation of an English-speaking state, and the government declared war on them. At least 300 people, including 130 soldiers and the police, have been killed. Many are missing. Moki Edwin Kinzeka. For VOA News, Boya, southwestern Cameroon.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Nashwan Kali, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, the African Capacity Building Foundation, the Africa Union's specialized agency for capacity development, has coordinated programs worth $700 million since 1991. the African Capacity Building Foundation, on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.